the beautiful thing about doing your own thing is to not end up with regrets, because people might stay in their job, trying to do their thing, stay linear, and then they realize they actually don't have a control of their job because somebody else is in charge. You don't necessarily decide what the company does or what the shareholders decide to do. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, I'm here for the security. Yet everything's insecure. The market's changed. You know, we've got cost of living crisis. We had financial crisis. We had COVID, you know, and when you can hold your wheel and drive, then you decide where you're going. You know, you might never know because you don't have the map. You know, the sat nav doesn't work for future. It works for now. And it's like, where do I go with this? What do I do? But you know what? As David Bowie said, I don't know where I'm going, but it's not going to be boring.
The idea of job security is outdated as a landline. If you haven't been in a search for a while, it's probable you will at some point, by choice or not. Most executives admit to staying way too long or sense what's coming and justify staying anyway. Here, there's another reason. The faulty belief that navigating to what's next will inevitably be worse and has to suck. Screw that. Lauren Greif has spent a lifetime in corporate and executive search, calling bullshit on stale career advice that most still use. This is Career Blast in a Half, the career podcast for executives ready to cut past outdated career advice to fuel your outcomes now. So let's go.
He's got a piercing in his chin, and he's a grown-up, and he's had some serious life experience. I'm talking about Radim Malanich. And the reason why he is joining us today is because we're talking about the business of I don't know. I work with you know who, executives and C-suiters, people who like to control a lot of the outcomes and have a very linear path from A to Z and how it's supposed to look. But that's not always the pathway to success. And that is one of the key reasons why I am so excited to have you here, Radim. Please, for those of us who don't know some of your humble beginnings, and I have to have you talk about some of my favorite parts of it, tell us how a guy from the Czech Republic ended up where you are now and what some of those key milestones or high points are, so we can wrap our heads around the renegade that you are, and we'll go from there.
Thank you very much for this introduction. I'm very excited to be on your show, and thank you for the, you know, for the invite. And yeah, I love your title, Business of I Don't Know, because it kind of sums up my life pretty well. I didn't know for a long time who I wanted to be in life. I don't think I still have the ultimate answer who I want to be in life, but I'm getting through the sort of universe of breadcrumbs kind of leading my journey. Like, where am I going? What's going on? Like, you know, this looks good. This tastes good. This sounds good. Like, I want to be more involved. So as you said, my upbringing, my story starts in Czech Republic. I was born in 1978. That makes me 45 now. And I've lived half of my life in London, England. And it was everything I've done in my life was a spur of a moment, especially the early formative years is a spur of a moment. So I wanted to join an ice hockey team before I could ice skate. I wanted to start a band before I could play an instrument. I wanted to be a DJ. I only had 5 records. You know, I wanted to move to England, and I kind of could speak English, but you know, I wasn't exactly great because I wanted to be close to the music at the time, and around the year 2000 when I moved here. The internet was a thing, but it wasn't working as well as it is now, and it wasn't as, you know, a universal tool. So I wanted to be closer to the culture, because some people might be thinking, you know what, I want to live in Japan, Tokyo, I want to live in, you know, Buenos Aires and stuff. And I was like, look, one plane ride away, you know, 1 hour and 50 minutes, and I'm in the place where I always wanted to live, because I didn't know what I wanted to be. I knew that I wanted to speak English every day because I was always obsessed with languages. As a child, I wanted to learn Swedish. I had no connection to Sweden, but I wanted to speak Swedish. And I taught myself, like, to a moderate level, quite a few Swedish words and kind of try to make sentences, because I just love what language can do for us, like how we communicate, how it can make us feel, inspire. And somehow everything unraveled from there because I moved to the UK, had loads of conversation with loads of people, mainly about music. You know, you don't go too far, you know, on the planet without having conversation about death metal, you know. early 90s death metal from all over the world. And you know, you can find people about, you know, if you're into music, you always find a friend. There's always someone in the world that you, you know, you're at a party, you go, hey, how about this? And when I go to Canada, I always mention, hey, I'm a fan of a band called I Mother Earth. And all the good Canadians go, oh, dude, we love you. But I totally digress. So yeah, it's conversations and intrigue, and eternal curiosity is what I got, how it got me to the place where I'm now. I've been running my own design agency for the last 22 years. I've been, you know, illustrator, art director, music video director, creative director. I've been all sorts of things because the world's never finished. You know, we got this Pandora's box, you know, this a chest of, you know, treasure chest of amazing things to go through. And I don't always feel like, you know, I've completed something. I always need to find out, like, okay, well, what else is there? What can we put together? Like, how these two things that are totally unrelated, how can I put them together? And yeah, the business of I Don't Know definitely guide me to here, because that's where exciting things are. Because when you know, you got half of the answers, and that's never really, you know, the thing to do for me.
For those of us who may not be familiar with Brand New, your agency, tell us about some of the clients that you serve, because I know that that has been maybe even a very lofty or unexpected surprise. How are you working with these big, big brands, having huge, huge conversations if you don't know Jack? How are you able to do that?
The thing is, you don't always know the answers. But as I said, there's always breadcrumbs, you know, there's always something to follow. So when you have a conversation, you're halfway to finding the answer. But I have had the pleasure to work with pretty much every brand in the world. But I think apart from Nike, I think that never happened. But I went to do I did a presentation and workshop for all the designers at Adidas, for example. I work on Harry Potter platform 9¾. So if you ever find yourself in London, in the King's Cross Station, I have had the pleasure to work on the digital e-commerce for the store, which is the most profitable store in England per square foot. It's all through meaningful connections. It's like you find people who go somewhere, and you know, if you stand for something, and if you kind of really want something really achieved, then people will take you with them. So, yeah, I've had incredible successes and incredible stories where we just showed up and we were excited to learn. We were excited to get stuck in. And for me, like, it was never about, you know, this job is not big enough. You know, like it was in fact, it was the opposite, because I always say that a bigger fish doesn't taste better. We can have all of these strives, and there's so many things in our, especially in the creative industry, where people really want to go after, you know, the household clients and all of the sort of kind of, what's the word, glory hunting project. You know, they want to be glory hunters. And then you realize, you know, the bigger trophy is not that easy to lift, you know, because it's really hard to get. And I kind of grew my career from the bottom up. And, you know, whilst I can look back and say, you know, I wish sometimes, you know, sometimes I wish maybe I should have started my career sooner. No. I started when I was 22. I have already tried many different things in my 20s and late teenage years. And it kind of gives me what I always say, like the sort of the magic ingredients of what I want to take forward. Because, you know, any skills, like, you know, so someone asked me the other day about, like, how do you solve problem with a big client? And I'm like, it's like being in a band, because you've got five people, you want to keep everyone happy. You have to compromise. We have to find something. You set yourself a genre. You set yourself a style. And then you find your freedom and limitations. And yeah, having a branding agency always stemmed from my love for illustration and visual storytelling. And that kind of gave us that niche and something different in the world to offer, because, you know, when you excite people, they want to work with you.
You said a couple of things that I really want to double click on or go back to, because I think it's easy for people who are listening to this who may not be a creative to say, oh, well, you know, he got to do this because he's a creative. And it's okay to not know when you're a creative, or who cares about business if you're a creative. And so, you know, you're working on your third book. Is it third right now?
Seventh.
Oh, seventh.
And Sorry. Actually, I'm actually working on the books 7 to 11. So I've got six books out, and we're working on another five, like actively working on those.
So my apologies. You're working on your seventh book. You have that mapped out for 11. So this is clearly a guy who does have a plan, but it doesn't mean that it's also stuck in or rigid, so it doesn't have the agility to move around. And so when I was alluding to before, when people kind of give creatives a hall pass, right, and say, yeah, what I'm really curious about is the through lines of the lessons that anybody, even if you are in tech or financial services or law, can take away from the business that I don't know. And I did pull out some of the key kind of threads or themes that came from some of your other previous books about embracing your unique creative compass. So you don't need to be a creative to have a creative compass. And what I would love to have you dive into is what that really means.
You said some amazing things there, because I don't think I'm that creative. I just think creatively, but I always say that when you see people who are pissed off with their protest sign and you read that protest sign, you always say, I only wish I was as creative as those people. Because when you give people purpose, they'll find their creativity, they find their expression, they find their voice, their projection, you know, their power, their strength. And that's where creativity comes through. Just because I've got creative director in my title, I'm more of a director than creative director. I'm just finding solutions, and it doesn't make me that much different to a CEO or, you know, ops manager or CTO, because all you have to do is just join the dots. You don't create, you know, amazing 16th chapels or whatever. Like, we're making things that need to slot in the business environment, because what we create is ultimately destined for more professional environment for, you know, that slots into economy. So we put things together sometimes that don't make sense to regular mortals. You know, when we create our visual campaigns, we can have a play. But if I was to give anyone those tools, they might be really surprised how much more they can be actually creative with those tools, because you don't have the precedent of the previous work saying, well, the blue needs to come with monochromatic, or it needs to come with harmony colors. It needs to be like, you know what, let's put it all together how I feel. And I've got two young children at home, and they are powerhouses because they don't have any precedent. You know, they're like, we don't care. We draw the stuff that we see what it should be. And when you think about children, like their food palette is kind of limited. They're like, I don't want to eat many sort of adventurous foods, but I'm an incredible creative. Whereas we go older and we're like, you know what, I eat all sorts of food, but I don't feel as creative, you know, as I'm in a child. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, why is it that the food always balances out the creativity? We should be all together, because I just feel we've been given the most fantastic time to live on this planet, especially now, because, you know, it's never been ideal and it never will be ideal, but we live currently in a climate which some of it is very broken, some of it's fine, but some of us are lucky to live wherever we want to be, speak the language we want to speak, we can do the things we want to do, and we can pivot at any moment we want to do. Because sometimes you find yourself that your pivot is not the speedboat that can just do a 360 or 180 as quickly as you want. You know, sometimes our lives are a bit more like the cruise ship that takes a little bit of a while to change course. But you can still make a decision about, look, you know what, I'm going to change, I'm going to do this. You know what, why not? Like, we can do this stuff. And I think that's the most exciting part, because being stuck with something doesn't need to be the status quo. That's it.
I think that you're hitting a bit of a nerve, because This is true and not but. And unless you have that inner drive, it feels like it's daunting. People are constantly, constantly talking about all the things that are preventing them from getting to a certain place. You've opened up all the lanes and see it completely differently. So is that coming from a place of mindset? Is that coming from a place of faith, of being able to just, I mean, you've said it in the earlier part of this podcast, you know, you did everything with no preparation. For most people, that would be the worst thing that they could ever do. So how is it that you feel this level of freedom and sure-footedness that somehow it's all just going to work out? And what would you tell other people that are either obsessing or anxious about pursuing a path with some sense of confidence or levity?
Sometimes say that you need to define your envy. You know, we see everybody around doing, you know, supposedly amazing things, you know, and some people are, you know, clearly doing those things. Some people might be just lying because social media and anyone can say anything they want. But I kind of liken it to the highway of life and creativity. So let's talk about a highway of life. So five lanes, you know, let's talk about the LA five lanes. And you go the slow lane all the way up to the fast lane. And in the fast lane, there's all the flashy cars, you know, everyone's going fast, everyone's in a hurry somewhere and don't know really where. And then you get people in the slow lane and they're looking at those people in the fast lane and go, well, that looks quite good. You know, it's fast, it's flashy, it's bold, you know, clearly they've got money, they've got a lifestyle. That I must be aspiring to that, only to realize that taking things the way you need to take them in any lane you need to be, it's always your true story. You know, the society, I think, tried to sort of, in a way, sort of bamboozle us and reprogram us to say, you know, we've got success porn, we've got money porn, like everyone's pretending to be, you know, something they maybe not. And sometimes when you see the true story of someone's drive, journey, you go, I would love to have that story, you know, because when you put yourself on the path of, well, what I've done so far, it comes with lots of uncertainties. And one of my drives is, because I'm an immigrant in a different country, is insecurity. You know, I don't have a financial cushion. I mean, I'm married to an English girl. We've got English kids and I've got sort of English family here. But for most of my life here was uncertainty. You know, like, okay, I need to have enough to support myself. I can't go to anyone to ask for money or anything. So that was like a double the drive to actually try to succeed. And it's very much well documented how immigrants are much more driven in foreign environments because, you know, you look at, you know, for example, people like Steve Jobs, even though he was American, he was half Syrian. And you got all of these examples of people who do really well because somehow we got that extra drive. But on that highway, what I talk about is the fact that, you know, if you see something and you want it, you go for it. You know, you have to work with the uncertainties because if you didn't do it, then you might end up with regrets. You know, sometimes you look at your story and you read all of these sort of social media posts like, well, this lady was 96 years old and this is what she said before she died. And it was like, I wish I didn't work as hard. I wish I did this. I wish I wrote that screenplay. I wish I did that and da-da-da-da-da. And it was From Strength to Strength by Arthur Brooks when he talks about, you know, how people reflected on some of their parts of their life and some of the most creative parts were the ones where they reflected on the most. You know, like, met your grandpa, he died, and then I was trying to make a play. I mean, I'm paraphrasing it badly, but the beautiful thing about doing your own thing is to not end up with regrets because people might stay in their job, trying to do their thing, stay linear, and then they realize they actually don't have a control of their job because somebody else is in charge. You don't necessarily decide what a company does or what the shareholders decide to do. And you're like, oh, wait a minute, like, I'm here for the security, yet everything's insecure. The markets change. You know, we've got cost of living crisis. We had financial crisis. We had COVID, you know, and when you can hold your wheel and drive, then you decide where you're going. You know, you might never know because you don't have the map. You know, the sat nav doesn't work for future. It works for now. And it's like, where do I go with this? What do I do? But you know what? As David Bowie said, I don't know where I'm going, but it's not going to be boring.
I'm with you there. I love this line. And I think that this is so pertinent and also so profound at the same time. You said, ride the wave and don't let it drown you. And one of the reasons why I love this is because that's quite the balancing act, right? And I'd love you to share a little bit about how that applies to folks who are either in their job search or their careers. I'm going to just raise my hand like with full extension here. I have a tendency to overwork. And if I want to be really honest, I'm kind of a workaholic. So I let that sometimes drown me, and that's not good. And it's especially not good because, let's be honest, I'm advocating for people to love their work, and I do love my work, but love their work without necessarily burning out. So how does that apply to folks in their career? Ride the wave, don't let it drown you. I got a gift for you. That's why we took this quick break. So here's the deal. Go ahead, click the link below. You're going to get the free ebook called Unlocking the Hidden Job Market. And just so that you know, the hidden job market, that's where 80 to 85% of the opportunities are and where the highest quality candidates are found. So in this ebook, you're going to get a blueprint to score faster referrals, more enthusiastic referrals that lead to face time with the companies and the roles you really want to align to. Plus the same 6 exercises that we use with my private clients to build your roadmap to career mastery. So if you want to access the hidden job market where the highest quality candidates go, just click the link below and we've got you all set. So let's get back to the show.
I mean, we all overwork. You know, if you get obsessive and passionate, I mean, passionate. I think I always feel like the passion is the wrong word when you get obsessive, because I always say that if you have a purpose in life, you go from a slacker to burnout. You know, if you don't know what you want to do, you're like, I don't want to feel like waking up before 12 noon. You know, I don't feel like want to do whatever. I'm going to hang out with my friends. And then you find that thing and you're like, you know what? I can leave them to do their thing and I'm going to work on myself. I'm going to work on myself and see what I can do with this thing called life. Because, you know, There's so many questions I get in my talks and guest lectures for universities, and people say, like, how do I notice when I burn out? And like, well, the burnout, there's many different facets of burnout, but when you do that thing that you love so much and you do it all the time because you can't see yourself doing anything else, that's sometimes the necessary byproduct, because you're going to only sort of do through pattern recognition, you're going to improve on yourself. And you find your time how to do the thing that you love and look after yourself, because we all have to burn out at least once, twice, 10 times, because that's just the journey of life. That's how we need to learn. If I tell you that the oven or the fire is hot, what are you going to do? Like, well, I don't trust you. I'm going to put my finger in the oven, or I'm going to put my finger in a flame or whatever. Maybe, but it's about finding the right understanding of the patterns. Because unless you burn out, unless you really take it too far, you never know what you're exactly doing. I think that's really important of us. It's a journey of discovery, because I can tell you, in fact, I can give you a book which I've written about how not to burn out, how to create optimal conditions for creativity. And guess what people do? They still do a thing and they still do the burnout. And only then they realize, I think I'm doing this all wrong. I think I'm making mistakes here. Let's find out. What am I doing wrong here? Because we need that experience. We need it. And, you know, I think I'm not an advocate for work crazy. You know, I'm very much against working at night. I mean, we need to listen to our bodies and I think we need to do this stuff. But my working record is terrible in on paper, and also equally impressive, because in 20 years of my careers, I've put in 30 years of hours. I worked 2 days in one day for most of my career, because I was in Disneyland. It was the most amazing thing ever, you know? Not mostly for American listeners, I wasn't in Disneyland per se, but hypothetical Disneyland, you know, having the tools, having the work, clients, and my work turned into what I didn't know at the time, obsession. Because the survival instinct kicked in, the dopamine kicked in, adrenaline kicked in, you know, the success receptors were going, we're doing good here. Like, you're needed, you know, you got instant gratification, delayed gratification, everything's happening, everything that you started working towards is happening. You've watered your seedlings and they are growing. This is amazing. But I didn't know how tall I wanted to grow my plants, you know, hypothetical plants, you know, strap in, there's more analogies coming. But this is why I burn out really badly, because I didn't listen to my signals. So I could see myself physically deteriorating. I could see things in sort of like how it affected me. I was over caffeinated, dehydrated, and I had to do this. You know, I I can tell everyone how it's been done. And I still get daily messages from people who listen to podcasts or read the books, and they're like, yeah, I had your advice, but I still did what I did. You know, like, we just don't always follow what we need to do. And that's the problem.
So steering this conversation into the direction of your up and coming book and series, you're talking about risk.
I am.
So in the business of I don't know, how do you assess risk? Because risk, of course, it can be so many things to so many people. You could be risking your reputation. You could be risking your financial, you know, near nest egg. You could be risking just an identity of I'm switching from this area to that area. So talk to us, please, about your take on risk and what we need to avoid and what we need to embrace.
Well, towards the end of last year, after I published 2 books in 1 year, which was Creativity for Sale and Mindful Creative, it was one of the risks, because I wanted to publish 2 books at the same time, because before I somehow managed to publish 4 books in about 5 years. And then I took 3 years out. I was working on my agency stuff. We had a second child, you know, I was very much, and it was COVID, even though I managed to publish a book in the COVID. But for me, it was like, it's more about the risk is always the direction, if that makes sense. Because anything in our life is a risk. You crossing a street is a risk. No? Getting on a plane is a risk. Eating food that you never had from a restaurant that looks a bit dodgy. You know, like, everything is a risk. And the title of my book kind of came to me in a boutique when I was with my son walking through the flowery Chelsea in London. And beautiful suburbs, and there's this bag that says "No risk, no story," and that was the light bulb moment. I was like, "Dude, what you've been doing, you don't have any what ifs. Like, right now, there's no what if. Like, you've just spent year of your life deflecting all new work for your agency. You know, you just were servicing existing clients. I've scaled out my team just so I can actually pursue my dream of actually properly growing my publishing business, because I think there's a natural end to our career. Sometimes our stories are made of different acts. You know, sometimes you got the CEO, or you got the high-powered exec who just goes from the junior in the ranks all the way to senior, you know, and that's the end of it. That's the end of the story. You know, like, it's a very linear path. Whereas I just see with the no risk, no story is about, you know what, let's do it. Like, there's a protagonist, like, you're the protagonist, then what can you be? Because if something fails, if something fails, you can always go back. Like, this is the beautiful thing. Like, if something doesn't work, well, there's always a fallback. Obviously, you had a job, it can change. But when we don't get lost on our sort of new journeys, we never know what we might discover. You know, what is it that, you know, it's sort of niggling at us? What is it that we can try to do? Because I didn't know I was going to be a graphic designer. I didn't know I was going to be brand director, let alone author. I mean, but I just could open my own doors. I realized there's doors, and if I don't open them, then I will never find out what's behind that door. At the beginning of my design career, I found this book called book by Paul Arden called "It's Not How Good You Are, It's How Good You Want to Be." You don't even need to read a book. That cover is like everything. And I realized I was average DJ. My band was above average. You know, I could have been a better ice hockey player. I could, you know, do all sorts of things better. And I realized, you know what? Now is my chance. I'm growing older. My patience is getting bigger. I can actually spend time knuckle down, and I can push away some of the noise. Of course, it takes me, you know, everything started making sense when I was 40. It's like, okay, so we picked up all of this knowledge, picked up all of this sort of patience and a vision of where we can go with this. And let's double down on this path and see for the next 5 to 10 years what we can get out of this. Because my dream is to have 12 books and see what I do next, you know, turn into documentaries or do things. Because the best bit is, if you start trying new food, analogy alert. When you start trying new food and it tastes fucking good, you're like, I'm coming to this restaurant every week. We're going to do this. Because you're discovering something new. Your receptors are popping up going, dude, we're going to try this. This is amazing. And that's what it is with creativity and life stories and conversations and explorations. Like, we're opening things that were not open to us before. And that's just the biggest reward because, you know, whoever did drugs in their life or tried new things or had sex for the first time, you never have the same feeling twice, you know? So it's like, how do you find new experiences? Because the life's not complete unless, you know, you've tried everything, really, in my opinion.
I cannot wait for this book. I also absolutely love the title. And I am a big, big, big believer that even though those risks are happening, right, it's almost like you get better at taking risks, even though every time it's a new risk. It's almost like the fear quotient starts getting smaller and smaller, even though the risk can be bigger and bigger, just because exactly how it echoed in your story. You did it here, you did it there, and you developed that muscle. So
I can tell you, like, we're in the business of I don't know. Sorry for jumping in, but I just wanted to attach the little couple of things on that thing you just said. No risk, no story is about how to be okay when you're not okay, because everything F's up, you know, everything messes up. Like, there's always an issue with something doesn't work. But I've learned this from one of my therapists. She said, people come here because they want to learn how to feel. People come here because they don't want to feel bad, yet they need to learn how to feel okay feeling bad. And this is all about risks. You know, you like things, but just might not work out. Sometimes when you think about the success rate of companies, you know, Apple's got a graveyard of products that never worked out. Google's got the same for Amazon. Whereas in our lives, we tell ourselves that we have to somehow be going step up, getting the accolades, getting the successes, getting, you know, the exit plans from companies. But no, sometimes you go 2 steps up and then you take a lift back to the basement, you know, even though if you don't want it. And I think this is that thing, like, you know what? If it's not complicated sometimes, then what is it? Because it needs to have some challenges. Like, we are hardwired for challenges. We've got survival instincts. We need problem solving. And, you know, I've known stories of people who like retire really early and they get bored. Because they got nothing to do. You know, there's only that many rounds of golf you can play and take a boat on a lake on a river or in a sea. And it's like, we need challenges. We need things. And you know what? I never knew that I would be doing this. But I don't know. When I was a child, I thought when I saw people in suits going to work in suits, I was like, I want to do that. And then I grew up and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that because I think there's other things to do in life. And you know what, we can all dress nicely, but I just felt somehow, because there was no manual for me, you know, like I didn't have a pushy parent to tell me, you know, I have to do this and you have to do that. I just made my own sort of map and followed it. And that, it was by accident, more or less.
By accident. There is no accident is really what I think we end up figuring out after we think we've made a bunch of errors and there was an accident. But honestly, from my perspective, and certainly as I sit, you know, across the pond from you, I don't see any accidents. I see a lot of good fortune that happened, you know, not necessarily in an expected way. What I want to do is have you share with us? I almost feel like I need to ask you to give us a permission slip. You know, I use these post-its from time to time, and I need a reminder every now and again because I too get a little like high strung and freaked out about things. And this one here that I've had for a while in 2024 says, this is happening. This is happening. And I really look to you, Radim, as a way of allowing us all, like I said, that permission and also the kind of quiet applause to say, hey, you know what? Go make a mess. Go make a mess. Go experiment with this mess, and then come out and figure something out from the mess. So what would your post-it be that is also doubling as a permission slip?
Wow. Yeah, that's a good one. I think we act on our impulses. We've got impulses. We're like, I want to be something. I want to be that tomorrow. And I remember as a teenager, I started trying to make some music on a computer, like just putting samples together. And somehow I was like, oh, I can see myself being reviewed in a magazine. Like I'm going to be as good to be reviewed. And it always was that drive that I was thinking beyond the process. I was thinking, what's the reward? Whereas as we go older, you're like, okay, the reward doesn't matter. Somebody once asked me like, is it no risk, no reward? I'm like, no, it's no risk, no story. The reward doesn't matter. Because we can be in situations and someone says, okay, so you're the creative one, so tell me what's the answer. I'm like, I've been here for 5 minutes. I've got no idea what we're talking about. you just allow yourself the time. And I just feel like when you talk about a mess and making things clearer and getting more clarity in the process and the outcome, I just love the fact that when people build a house with bricks, not the American with wood, you know, if you're on a building site, it's a mess. It doesn't take shape for a long time. Things wobble. You need to rebuild things. You need to change things. And only then you have the outcome. Only then you see the end of none, the result of your plan, your story, you know, your actions. And I think we've grown very impatient in a way that if something doesn't stick within 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 2 days, 3 hours, you know, whatever, I'm making random sort of lengths of time, we get impatient and we don't allow ourselves the time to actually explore because somehow we feel that, you know, the highway of life, the fast lane, there's the fast people going strong. And like, well, I'm taking my own time. And is that okay? Like, can I do this? Because there's nothing more amazing than living your own story, you know, and making a sense out of the mess. You know, it's our mess. It doesn't need to bother anyone else. And I think that's the most amazing part because, for example, writing books, it's a mess. You know, it's a lot of mess until it becomes clear at the very end. We're ready. You know, it's somehow like we've cleaned everything up. We've done stuff. And because I run my own publishing company, for example, to give you an example, you know, I've got an idea for a book. I've got about 5,000 words of sketches in my phone. It's going to take a while for it to be, you know, crystal clear. But that's the good part because we don't always want to delay the gratification. You know, I can tell you of how many friends and people I know who would love to have written a book, but they don't really want to, they don't fancy the process of writing it. They would just like to have it written. But that's the best part because it's taken me about 8 years to find out how to write books. Because at first it was impulsion. It was like, it was the business of, I don't know. It's like, I know how to design a book. I know how to write. And well, I know, you know, as you can tell from my accent and from my grammar, you know, it's help of editors that make it clean. But it's making those baby steps and working out what's the next door, what's to open, and then have feedback come back. And people say, well, great book. When is the second one coming up? I'm like, what do you mean? I just finished one. And then you just go and you get spurred on by friends and people and readers, and it actually sells. You're like, okay, actually, I can make a living from this. This is fun. Wait a minute. No one's doing this. It's like around me, you see people like high up, very top, and there's the self-publishing sort of middle ground and stuff. You're thinking, well, I can turn this into a business. We can do this properly and I'll see what it is. Because no one says you can't do this. You know, we are democratize, we can do stuff. You know, this conversation doesn't have to be broadcast on ABC or BBC or whatever. Like, we're having this conversation because we want to have this conversation. We want to share with people. And I think if there's anything in this world that I want to take away from this conversation and from the books and or what you do and what I do, is just that anything goes. Like, you can do anything. Like, if someone has proven the concept that they can do it, you can do it. You know, for that reason, I started doing public speaking, because I was bored what I was hearing on the stage, because people talked about themselves, not what I can take home. The books were just, you know, for example, books in my industry were just a bit boring. You know, they haven't really reinvented themselves. So I just tried weird things, and they sold. And they sold more than the traditional books. You're like, well, wait a minute. It was all about that risk. I didn't label it risk. I didn't think of it as a risk. It was more of a challenge, conundrum, you know, question, like, what can I do? Because what I always say, especially at the moment, is that no one's waiting for your greatness, especially in the creative industry. No one's waiting for your greatness, unless you've got very pushy parents or somehow somewhere, you know, like some sort of mega fan. Okay. No one's waiting for this, because it has to come from us.
I'm taking that. No one is waiting for your greatness. I'm taking that.
But from you.
That's right.
Ooh.
And then I need to ask you this. As a former DJ and as somebody who is in a band and loves music, this is going to be a hard one. Do you have a walk-up song? Do you have that song that, like, pumps you up every time? I don't care if it's heavy metal. I don't care if it's...
Okay, I mean...
You know I'm going to ask.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so... I'm putting together my, this is amazing. Thank you for this question, because I've been living unknowingly that question for the last 5 weeks. I'm putting together, I don't know when this is coming out, but it's my cut out of the bag, but I'm doing a headline talk, one of the headline talks of Barcelona in April. And they put me on the main stage, and I'm thinking, well, the challenge is there. Like, it just could have been, you know, not only I've got different things to say to other people, because I'm promoting my books rather than my creative sort of, you know, visual business, in my studio. So I was like, okay, we need a killer song to come on. And I'm a big fan. So normally it would be Mute Math. So I'm a fan of Darren King, the drummer. Excuse me. And Mute Math are just incredible band. They've disbanded, but it's just music that moves you. It absolutely, I have to send you the link afterwards.
Yes, you do.
But my walk on, my the song that I'll be using is by Nate Smith, who's a drummer, and he's published an album, released an album, which is basically just drums, 48 minutes of just drum tracks. So imagine an a cappella, so no other instruments, just music, just literally just drums. And there's the last track on the album, which just kills it. It's just literally, it's just the heaviest drums, it's upbeat, it's just dynamic. And sometimes you think about it like, okay, maybe I want to use Taylor. Crikey, that's going to sound bad. Taylor from Foo Fighters.
Oh, yeah.
Taylor Hawkins. I was like, I love Rope and I like Bridges Are Burning. And I was like, maybe I'm going to use this. And you play just the backing track. It's just like, okay, that's just the rock drumming. Whereas you find that that sort of richness in the performance of Nate Smith, and I'm like, oh my god, it's gonna rip it. We're gonna be doing animations for it, we're doing all sort of animated typography. And you know what, in my mind that track changes every day.
Yeah, that's why I knew
it changes every day.
I knew
there's an amazing artist called The Pocket Queen. She's got a song called We Gotta Move. And it's, again, she's a drummer. I love syncopation. I just love, like, people who sing in syncopated style. Drummers who, you know, are just fusion drummers. And I just love that it's got these little sort of jumps, the little steps in the music. So, yeah, I mean, I can send you links to my playlist, which has got about 5,000 songs each. You know, it's I love music. You know, it's incredible what we can do with it. So thanks to digital technology like Spotify, because you can think of it, you can play it.
There you go. We will 100% make sure your website is in the show notes. Of course, your LinkedIn. And I just want to thank you, Radim. Thank you so much You are such an inspiration. And as I said before, the epitome of permission. And I really am grateful that you came on this show to kind of counteract some of the type A, and myself included, thinking, believing processes that tell us we need to do it this way, and that if we don't do it this way, it won't work out. And you are the embodiment of that. So thank you for coming on the show today. And for those of you who love this show, you know what I'm going to say, right? Yes. First things first, please subscribe. Second, please, because you're here, I'm going to take it as a compliment and ask you, please, would you put together an Apple Podcast review? Because we're growing, and this is really important because we get to speak from one too many, and you and your career are so important to us. Thank you so much, and I can't wait to talk to you again next week.
Thank you for joining today. We appreciate your listening ears, big time. We ask this, use these tools, not tomorrow, right now, and share them by spreading the love, leaving us a rating and subscribe so you don't miss the next career blast in a half. Most of all, thank you for you.